Well, hello and welcome, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. It's so good to have you on the show again. I appreciate all the support we get, and so many of you have subscribed now to our YouTube channel and are watching us on any number of networks. I think we're on 29 DB networks right now, and some of you are listening on our podcast networks around the world. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for being here. Today, we got a show. It's all about consciousness, and this is an important show for all of us, I believe. You know, we're all consider ourselves conscious beings, but how do we really define consciousness? You know, some people define it as a state of quality of being aware, being able to perceive, think, experience. It really encompasses a large array of phenomena, the ability for us to be able to sense, to respond to our environment, to be self-aware. There's a lot of ways that we can define it. In fact, there's many different theories about what consciousness even is. And we're going to explore that today. And why? Why is that important for you? Well, in my own experience, the more aware, the more receptive I have become over the years, the more wisdom I've developed, the more understanding, the more courage, the more I've been able to let go of some of the old ways of thinking and acting and showing up. And it all comes from this thing we call consciousness. So we're going to be exploring ways for you to not only understand consciousness, but maybe be able to apply what we're talking about in your life so you also can have this understanding about how it shows up for you and become more aware and have more, probably more peace, more wisdom, more joy in your life. That's what I hope for you. Anyway, I have a very special guest today, and we're going to be talking, like I said, all about consciousness as soon as I get back from this short little break. We'll be right back.
Whether because of discomfort, lack of mobility, your lifestyle, or occupation, you sit inactively way too many hours a day. Introducing Ellipse, the premium quality automatic seated exerciser that strengthens legs, increases mobility, and boosts circulation without physical strain or impact.
It is so quiet that none of my coworkers even know I'm using it.
Strengthen and tone your legs. Increase your mobility, flexibility, and balance. Plus, stimulate healthy circulation.
My joints feel better, my knees feel better, my back feels better. It makes me feel stronger too.
Perfect for home therapy. Whisper quiet to use while you work.
My circulation is moving, I'm burning calories, and it makes me feel energetic.
Call now and order Ellipse, the seated exerciser that strengthens legs, increases mobility, and boosts circulation. Call and get upgraded to the deluxe bundle. Get the faster motor for 5 miles of steps per hour, the step counter, the sport mat, and wireless remote. Call now.
Welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster, and I'm here with my guest, Francisco. Welcome to the show. It's nice to have you.
Hi. How are you? Thanks for inviting me.
It's great to have you here. And for those of you that don't know my guest, Francisco, I hope I say your last name correct. Opetis, is that it?
Aboitiz,
I should know that. He's the director of Interdisciplinary Center for Neuroscience and professor of psychiatry at the Pontifical Universidad in Chile. His research includes the evolution of the brain and cognition and the neurocognitive underpinnings of conditions such as ADHD, autism, multiple sclerosis, and epilepsy. He is also involved in the social projects such as implementing robotics workshops for children in schools of social risk and screening resilience signatures in adolescent mothers. He has authored more than 140 scientific articles and is the author of A Brain for Speech, A View from Evolutionary Neuroanatomy of and a History of Bodies, Brains, and Minds, the Evolutionary of Life in Consciousness, Evolution of Life in Consciousness, and which is what we're going to be talking a lot about today. Anyway, welcome to the show. And I could go on and on with your bio. You've got a great bio. You got a lot of academics behind you, a lot of research. So it's really a pleasure to have you on the show, Francisco. Let me just start with the kind of the obvious question. What tripped your interest in neuroscience and getting down this path that you've gone down?
Yeah. It's a story I'm very, very, very pleased to tell, actually. As a kid, I was really very, very moved by living beings. I used to look at insects, plants, animals, and I collected them and all that. And at some point, I decided I want to be a biologist. And of course, my parents were very hesitant about this because they thought I should go to medical school instead. But at the end, I won the battle, and I ended up studying biology. When studying biology, I realized that there was this organ, which is the brain, which is the most complex object that we can find probably in this universe, as far as we know. So I became very intrigued about it. How does it work? And first of all, questions that, of course, every kid has made himself or herself, you know. Why am I, my consciousness, how my consciousness is bound to this body? Why? Why isn't bound to other bodies? So I really felt that the brain was the thing to study. And then I went to UCLA. I did my PhD there in neuroscience. And I counted the fibers of the corpus callosum, which is a tract that connects the two sides of the brain. So I can tell you these are 160 million fibers. That was my PhD thesis. But then again, I just continued wondering about this marvel that is the brain. I came back to Chile and started working with children in cognition, how children develop their cognition, and what happens when kids go neurodivergent, as they say now. I mean, like ADHD, autistic, etc. But still, in the back of my mind, there was always this like deep questions about ourselves, about nature, about how does consciousness arise in the natural world and all that. And I think these questions are those that moved me to write these two books, A Brainforce Page and The History of Body's Brain.
Well, you know, I have a question, and maybe just a philosophical question, but I'd like to ask you, does consciousness reside in the brain, or does consciousness reside outside? I guess, for lack of a better thought, there. Where does consciousness reside?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to tell you one thing. I don't know where consciousness resides, but I do know, and I'm pretty sure, that you need a brain for having conscious. Yeah. Brain is needed for consciousness. You could have severe, the brain largely disconnected from the rest of the body, as in the, I don't remember the word in English, but is the lockdown, the locked up syndrome, where people get disconnected from their senses and the motor things, but their brains, and they keep working, and they feel conscious. And now with brain machine interfaces, we can communicate with these people, you know, because we get the brain activity when the persons are trying to speak. This is fed into an artificial intelligence that translates this activity into speech, and people is becoming able to communicate with the relatives, etc. You know.
So you're saying now we can with our AI, we can now like if somebody's in a almost a not necessarily a coma, but in a state where they can't speak, we can interpret that now. We can, if they're thinking something, we can interpret what they're saying. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. You can, wow. You can sort of read their thoughts.
Wow. Okay. And how accurate is that?
Oh, it's in very controlled situations. It's not like you're with this thing and anybody can know what you're thinking. But yeah, they work pretty well in the setting they are designed. Hmm? They help a lot. People who is with problems with communication problems or motor problems, etc. Elon Musk already produced a brain implant that is being used for this, you know?
Wow. Okay, I didn't know that. This is all new to me. I love this. I bet my guests, my audience are going, yeah, well, we didn't know this either, maybe.
Yeah,
So, you know, you've studied consciousness a lot. And there's a lot of theories around consciousness. Where do the leading theories right now around consciousness fall short?
I think they fall short in one big thing, which is what is called the heart problem. There's this philosopher, David Chalmers, who argued he distinguished between the easy problem in neuroscience, which is knowing how the brain works. I mean, it's not easy at all, but for him, that was the easy part. The hard part is being able to observe or explain the subjective experience of living, is the sensation of red when you see the color red, is the sensation of pain, the sensation of happiness, is the subjective sensation, is something that is unreachable to us. In science, if we're doing science, we're trying to explain how the apple falls down from a tree to earth, you know? We must agree on what we're seeing. See? We must agree. But in this subjective aspect of consciousness, we will not agree on that, because only me is going to be the witness of my sensations. I can't share those with anybody else.
Well, so we got a collective consciousness that we all seem to share the same general thought. Yeah, the apple fell from the tree. The apple's red. It bounced on the ground. So it's kind of a collective sharing. But then there's the individual subjective. Well, my apple was red and blue and had a little spot on it, and that didn't fall as fast as you thought. It fell this way. And so there's a different experience going on. Is that what we're identifying?
Yeah, exactly. This collective consciousness, like as you say, has to do with the fact that we all live engaged in language, and with language, we refer to the same things, and we share the whole world through language. See, we all know what are trees, we all know what are ships, we all know. Language gives us a common word for all of us, you know?
Right.
And that's our extended consciousness, so to speak.
I get that. And, you know, I guess my question too is, and I got to take a quick break, we'll come right back, but, you know, is everything conscious in science, right? I mean, are the, you know, is, you know, the scientists, you know, what, 2022 got a Nobel Prize for entanglement theory, right? Everything's connected. Is everything connected and everything conscious? We'll be right back. I got to take a break. And when we come back, I'll have, we'll get that answer. So we'll be right back.
Imagine this is your money and someone wants to take it from you. Who is it? The IRS. Guess what? They want your money and they can take it, all of it if they want. Remember, they sent you that letter right over here that said, hey, you owe us a bunch of cash and we're going to take it from you right now. So what do? You fight back by letting our team of experts work it out with the IRS so you can keep your money. And hey, we're good at what we do. When you hire us, you get a team of guys on your side that know the IRS laws, and we'll fight really hard to save your money. So if you owe the IRS a ton of cash and you want to keep it, call right now and learn for free how we can help you put it back in your pocket. 5 minutes of your time right now can save you thousands of dollars. And the best part, it's a free call. So please call right now.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. I'll be right back with my guest in just a second. I just wanted to take a moment for an encouraging message from me. I hope that you will tell your family and friends about this show and go subscribe to our YouTube channel. That way you won't miss any of our shows. Plus, you can pass on this information to those that you care about, those that you love, so that we can all upshift our consciousness, upshift our thinking, and be able to live in more peace and harmony together. All right. Back to my guest, Francisco. I have a question, okay? So, you know, like I mentioned before the break, is everything conscious, or are just humans conscious, or just human and animals? Or how do we define that with your theory?
There are varied opinions on that. Huh? Yeah. Personally, I think that I'm pretty sure we are conscious. I think that our pets are conscious in a way. They don't have language. They can't tell, whatever, but they do feel pain, they feel happy, etc. But where do you end up? I mean, are worms conscious? That's arguable. Are cells conscious? There's a theory of pan-consciousness. Pan-consciousness relates to a notion that everything, like you said, everything is connected. And consciousness is a property of matter. Actually, this Roger Penrose, is a famous physicist. He was, I don't know if the first, but he planted the idea that consciousness was derivative from quantum uncertainty. It was particles are not really particles in quantum mechanics. They are waves, but when you observe them, they just the wave function becomes condensed, collapsed in a particle. So in the process of collapsing the wave function was a moment of consciousness, and for him, and what happens with us is that we have many collapses, so to speak, so many that our consciousness is so vivid. But consciousness is a property of matter. The problem with this theory is that it actually you can't demonstrate it. Actually, most theories of consciousness have this problem. It's practically impossible to demonstrate them. Because if you say, for example, the collapse of the wave function, but how do you measure consciousness there? How? What are you going to do there? Or people who think that there are some brain states that are related to consciousness.
Would you say it's all subjective then? I mean, so some, one person might view the worm is conscious, and they may have some evidence that suggests that. And another person may say, well, no, the worm is not conscious because here's the evidence I have that shows that is not. But then it comes down to, I think, as you said, by language but defining what the paradigm or what the glasses, I guess, you got on that you're looking at this worm from. It's kind of it seems like it's very subjective, is what I'm hearing.
It's actually you're right. Actually, there are some researchers that, for example, when they study fear, for example, fear in animals.
Huh? Yeah.
And some researchers say, well, Charles Darwin, who's my hero, Charles Darwin said, animals have emotions like us. You know, our emotions derive from animals' emotions. But some researchers now are saying that Darwin was anthropomorphizing human processes to animals. And they talk about, for example, fear is a survival mechanism, but it's not fear. Fear is human. I don't agree with this view, but it's important that you know that there is people who think that way.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it was Nikola Tesla that said, if you want to understand the universe, you have to understand energy, frequency, and vibration, right? How do we understand that in terms of consciousness, right?
Well, I'm going to paraphrase Tesla. If you want to understand the brain, you have to think of vibration, frequency, and energy. The brain is an oscillatory machine. Now what we're doing with the brain, most research on neuroscience now relates to these oscillatory capacities and these wave functions that take place in the brain. It's the best way I think we can approach the functioning of the brain. So I think Tesla was right, but was especially right if we talk about the brain.
So if we talk about the physical matter, if we talk about the brain as being part of matter, that was exactly right. If we're understanding matter, we're understanding our physical reality, you know, understand frequency, vibration, and energy. And if we're not studying matter, if we're studying consciousness, which doesn't seem to have a physical aspect to it, or maybe it does, I don't know. Maybe do we have the ability to actually measure a thought right now? Can we see a thought? Do we know what a thought is? You know, I think it comes down to that.
We can do that. We can actually, with these brain computer interfaces that I told you with these patients.
Yeah.
What you can do actually is you can get an avatar of the person, and the avatar talks and expresses itself as if it was a real person. You can even monitor the brain activity of somebody thinking of, for example, they see a short movie. You record the brain activity when they are seeing this short movie. You feed this activity into an artificial intelligence, and the artificial intelligence generates a text that describes what was going on in the movie. You know?
Yeah, but there's another piece to that. Because, you're right. We can create we have holographic technology right now. Yeah. We have AI. You can input all of my information that I've ever written about, all my books and all your books and everything. And we can create an avatar, a holographic avatar, that looks and speaks and talks just like me. And if you ask it a question, well, tell me about consciousness, it'll spit out what I thought about consciousness and sound like me and be like me. But is that me, right?
That's a point. I don't think that's you. I don't think that's you.
And I think there's
this simulation has consciousness. I don't think so.
I don't think so either. And, you know, there's a piece, you know, AI, they say by 2040, we'll be able to pretty much replace all body parts. And it's like, well, if you had a ship and all the air, you replaced all the boards in the ship. Is it still the same ship? Well, I don't know. Maybe not.
Well, right. Yeah. Now, those are philosophical questions, but in a way, some of these questions are not really interesting. But when we talk about the mind, they are interesting. See?
Yeah, I agree, because I think everybody, especially, I saw you work with autistic kids, you work with children that, you know, their brains have somehow, you know, misaligned. And, you know, I'm glad we, you know, that there is a neuroplasticity that we can reheal a lot in our brains these days. And so that gives everybody a lot of hope. But where does consciousness fit into all of that? And, okay, I got to take another break. I'll be back. And when I get back, we're going to talk about your book too. So we'll be right back and talk about those two subjects.
Hi, everyone watching at home. We're here to remind you that if you or someone you know were injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have live agents available right now to answer your questions and tell you how much your case is potentially worth. Hi, I'm Gina Belich, here with spokesman and TV personality Tom Mustin with us in the Help Center. So, Tom, phones are really busy over there. Tell us what kind of calls you're seeing.
Well, Gina, first off, thank you for having me here in the call center with you. We always enjoy talking to the viewers and getting folks the compensation that they deserve. You know, we're seeing calls about all kinds of accidents, but the most common by far has been car accidents. So if you or someone you know were injured in an accident that was not your fault, give us a call right now. You'll speak with a live person. They'll answer any questions you have and tell you if you have a case and how much your case is potentially worth.
Thanks, Tom. All right, folks at home, you heard it. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now.
Well, welcome, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Foster, and we are definitely exploring seeing the unseeable, know the unknowable, and do the impossible. We're exploring the consciousness of consciousness, period. So consciousness, when it comes to children with autism, why is it important for us to understand what we're talking about here? Consciousness, when it comes to children, that their brains are not functioning properly.
Well, I believe these kids are as conscious as we are. Hmm? Yeah. There's no disorder of consciousness in these kids. There may be disorders in social abilities, in attentional abilities, but not in consciousness. Disorders of consciousness are very, very dramatic. It's like you said, it's coma, it's the vegetative state, it's something else. Having a condition like ADHD or whatever, you know, it's a way of living in the end. But we are all equally conscious.
I think I've never heard anybody say that, and I really like that theory. I think that there's not a disorder of consciousness. There might be a disorder in the brain, in a physical part, but you also brought in karma and, you know, the imprinting of the mind. Is that, how does that all impact, tie together?
What do you mean by karma?
Well, I would say imprinting of the mind, the past imprints that are in
the past. I mean, of course, you mentioned that neuroplasticity and memory mechanisms that start to build since we are in the womb, you know.
Yeah.
All these mechanisms generate our memories and our attitudes to the world, and all these are the result of our brain adapting to these situations. See, and these memories make up the stuff of our consciousness. See, because I'm seeing you in the screen, but I close my eyes and I can see you too. You know, because there's a memory of your face in my brain. See, and most of our minds is based on the memories we build throughout life, you know.
Right. Yeah, for better or not, and so
some people it can be terrible because they may have, you know, traumatic memories. Yeah,
right. That's exactly right. Well, okay. You wrote this amazing book, A History of Bodies, Brains, and Minds, The Evolution of Life and Consciousness. I love that title, by the way. What inspired you to write this one?
Well, my main inspiration was actually the big doubts that I have had since I was a kid. Why does all this come about? I mean, why do we live? Why do I have a consciousness? Where do we come from? Actually, the diagram in the cover is a tenophore. A tenophore is like a jellyfish, similar to a jellyfish, which is the first animal with a nervous system. This is the earliest animal you can see that has neurons. And in the bottom, you can see the human brain. I mean, that's a long trip I make, you know?
Yeah, huh? That's a long trip. So let me ask you, if we use the evolutionary model, is consciousness evolving then? Did we start with a certain consciousness as a jellyfish and now we're at a different consciousness as who we are today?
That's one likely possibility. I tend to have some sympathy for this view, you know, that consciousness is not something that appears at some point, but you can have degrees of consciousness. Huh? And the point is that at some point, there's got to be some inflection point in which consciousness just explodes because we make representation of the world around us, a coherent representation. We share this with others. I mean, I'm pretty sure that all these things most animals cannot do, you know. Dogs and monkeys do parts of this whole thing, but not all.
Well, it brings a good question.
Yes, I mean,
is consciousness evolving in plants and animals too, right? I mean, you know, did dogs 2,000 years ago have a different consciousness than dogs do today, right?
Well, yeah, because they're domestic. I mean, and that has changed their lives forever. But I think that there are some key events. First of all, having neurons. Second, having a brain. And third, having language. These are three key points, but I think there's a continuous, you know, in this whole process.
Well, let me ask you, Dr. Francisco. You know, there seemed to be a shift in consciousness during the Renaissance, and then again in about the 1800s when we didn't, up until 1800s, we really didn't understand electricity, right? We didn't really understand energy much. But then there was a shift, and then all of a sudden, you know, we have light bulbs, we have, you know, we start to understand, and then the 20s, we start to understand there's atoms and all, you know, where did these shifts in consciousness come from?
Well, I think it comes from the rise of humanism, you know? In the Renaissance, people began to think about humans as, and I'm talking not about God. It's not that they were strictly atheistic, but they were talking about the value of being human, you know, of being, and this came together with a scientific revolution. First of all, Copernico, Galileo, many writers that started about talking about humans, about humanity. You know, novels started to appear, talking about the life of people. You know, that's what's so intriguing about novels because you get inside the mind of other people when reading a novel, you know? And I think that was a very important event for the consolidation of this idea of consciousness.
Yeah. Well, so excuse me, we've had several shifts in consciousness. And I want to get back to your book. By the way, where can people get your book before I move on here?
Just MIT Press or Amazon.
Amazon. Okay. Amazon. All right. So
Amazon is much easier.
Okay, great. And for my listening audience there, I want you to be able to know the name of the book again. So it's called A History of Bodies, Brains, and Minds, The Evolution of Life and Consciousness. And it's by Francisco. And Francisco, can you, I'll spell your last name. I hope I'll spell it right. It is, where did it go? A-B-O-I-T-I-Z. A-B-O-I-T-I-Z for my listening audience.
Aboitis, yeah.
Aboitis, yeah. Aboitis,
yeah. Yeah, it's a name from the Basque country. My parents came from the Basque country, Spanish Basque country to Chile. So,
oh, wow. Very nice. And if you want to find Francisco on Instagram, I'm putting it on the screen, but you can go to Francisco Abotis.neuroscience. Yeah, okay. You can find him there on Instagram, Francisco Abotis.neuroscience. So you want to check that out. All right. So, I'm going to take one last quick break and then when we get back. It's interesting because what's happening right now is there seems to be an evolution of consciousness. It doesn't seem to be that, necessarily you're turning on TV and you're watching, oh, here's a shift of consciousness. Yeah. Where it seems to be is a grassroots level. And I'm wondering what that's about. And maybe you can shed some light on that. When we get back from this break.
All right.
All righty.
Hi, folks. Joe Namath here. Did you know that I wear hearing aids? I love my hearing aids, and I am here to help you get a deal on the same brand I wear.
Don't waste thousands on expensive hearing aids when you can get MD Hearing's revolutionary Neo hearing aids for just $297 a pair. The Neo is a true hearing aid, not an amplifier. With rechargeable technology many customers say is superior to more expensive models. And you can get two Neo hearing aids with a 45-day risk-free trial, free shipping, and free lifetime U.S.-based support for only $297. The Neo is nearly invisible with its tiny in-the-ear canal design.
Call my friends at MD Hearing and get the over-the-counter hearing aids that I use for you.
Call now and get not one, but two Neo hearing aids for just $297.
800-789-7885. Again, that's 800-789-7885.
Welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Foster. I'm talking with Dr. Francisco Abotis, and we're talking about his new book, and we're talking about consciousness and how it applies to you. There is an upshift in consciousness taking place. We've seen it in I've been traveling around the world. We've seen it in many parts of the world, and people are feeling it. It's underneath the surface. We're talking about evolution of consciousness. You know, maybe I'm making it up. I don't know. It feels like things are shifting here. Maybe it's just my subjective reality. Maybe it's not reality, right? How do we know if consciousness is evolving, or and if so, where's it evolving to?
That's a big question. That's a big question. The way I understand consciousness, and I actually in the book I make a diagram. It's like the existential iceberg, I call it, you know, because it's consciousness is like an iceberg where you see just the tip, you know, but below this tip, there's a whole organism, and the organism has multiple layers of functioning, from the very basic cellular mechanisms, homeostatic mechanisms. Homeostasis are all the processes that allow you to keep an internal state relatively safe. It's for example the way you regulate your temperature, or the way you regulate your 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 nutrition. And then over that come more elaborate processes, leading to a sort of a representation of the world around you. And finally, when you get language, you get this extended consciousness that you make, for example, an autobiographical memory, and you can plan the future, and you can think of things that happened last night, and whatever, you know, you can do all this. But consciousness is the result of all these layers, these underwater layers, you know, that get to the top. And what happens in the evolution of animals, at least, is that some animals get at some layers, but not at others, you know? So this layering is distributed, so to speak, in the animal kingdom. We're very lucky because we're the only ones, or unlucky, I don't know, we are the only ones who have language at one extreme. On the other hand, when we talk about AI, AI is just the tip of this iceberg. That's all these things I told you. It can talk about itself, can use memory, is very intelligent, etc. But doesn't have all the layers that are below. So that's why I think it's artificial intelligence are not conscious, but you can see a gradation of consciousness levels in different animals, depending on their competition.
You know, it's an interesting question. Like, I use ChatGPT a lot right now. I use it for writing copy for some of my email promotions. I take it to the grocery store now. And if I see something on a label that I don't understand, I'll ask ChatGPT, tell me what this chemical is, and it will cause harm to my body, right? So I'm using that form of AI right now. Where are we going with it? Like, you know, will there eventually be AI that is conscious? I don't know. I mean, or will it always be a mirror of what we put in?
I think it's going to be a mirror, and can be a very creative mirror. Huh?
Yeah.
Can be more than you expect, can do more than you expect, and it can fool you. And can be a lot smarter than you, you know? But I don't think it's going to be conscious, because it lacks all this biology, which is the submerged part of the iceberg that I was talking recently.
You know, AI is interesting, because AI can put a lot of different combinations together and, you know, come out with an idea. And of course, we have what I would call intuition, that, you know, that gut sense, you know, and some people have very developed intuition. It works very well. And other people, not so much, you know, their intuition may be 20% accurate, right? But others have very, very well developed intuition. I'm wondering if AI, it sounds like AI probably will always have this intuitive side of us that seems like it would be the choice maker, AI may give us a lot of information, but then we have this choice maker that we could choose. I think we'll always have that. That's what I think. Unless we give our power away to an AI, to a machine.
Well, we are giving away to the machines in many ways. When you use your navigator to get to some address.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
That's right. They take the decisions for you, you know?
Yeah, unless I know the territory, and then AI many times will give me the navigator will give me a choice. I went, well, I know this is much faster this way. I'm going to go this way, right?
And then you get wrong.
And then I go that way.
Okay, I was right.
Sometimes it's right, sometimes it's wrong. That's true. I love that. Okay. Well, okay. What, we only got a couple more minutes left. What do you want people to walk away with your book? Like, what are they going to know that they didn't know as a result of reading your new book?
I think the main message is that there is a continuum. There's a continuum of complexity, of course. Okay. between the earliest life forms and our terribly powerful brains, and that this continuum will evolve in our future if we don't become extinct for some reason, you know, like a nuclear bomb or whatever, you know, our evolution will merge with machines in a way. We will be able to, I don't know, to live, blind people will be able to see, disconnected people will be able to communicate. We will have probably nanobots circulating in a bloodstream, checking for cancer cells or whatever, you know, and we will merge with machines in a way.
Well, you know, a lot of people fear that, right?
That will lead us at the end. I don't know, but I think that will happen.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think a lot. I'm so glad you came on the show. We should have a further conversation around this, because a lot of people right now are unsure. You know, when they don't know what the future brings, they're fearful. Some people are fearful of AI. They're fearful of what robots are going to bring to them, and bots and nanoparticles and all that. And I think you shed a lot of consciousness on that, which is why I think, why I know that it would be really beneficial to my audience and myself to read your new book, A History of Bodies, Brains, and Minds, The Evolution of Life and Consciousness. It'll definitely help you to understand where we're going and realize that you're not going to lose your life. You're not going to lose control. You're okay. You're in the driver's seat, but we should understand. And one last question I didn't get to, but I'm out of time, and that is AI helping us evolve our consciousness? And we'll have to leave that to the next level, or you'll have to read the
book. I think it is. But we can which way, I don't know. But I think it is influencing our consciousness in many ways.
I think you're right. And so we did answer that, but you'll have to read the book to really get the details.
Exactly.
Dr. Francisco, thank you so much for being on the show. I really enjoyed
this conversation. It was a great talk.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thank all of you for being here. Please, like I mentioned earlier, please go to our YouTube channel and check out all of our shows and subscribe. Till next time, continue to see the unseeable, know the unknowable, and do the impossible. You can do that by watching this show. Take care.